Hey everyone, welcome to After Dark. Liv and I are here to sort of enjoy the mellow sounds of the evening time. And those sounds are getting a little bit spooky. Because we're close to All Hallows Eve.
It feels very eerie in here.
Are you in a spooky mood this year for Halloween, Liv? I find that I am not, but I'm also like more open to scary stuff. Like I'll watch it and listen to it and enjoy it more, but I'm not like, I don't feel spooked out.
So I think this is like the first year that I've really had like a lot of friends who are, just because I've joined the ranks of BookTube this year.
And congratulations to you for that.
Yeah. Congratulations to me for that. But being more of a horror reader lately, that a lot of it's horror BookTube. So I actually have like friends to talk about. Not that I don't have friends. Most of my friends are into horror to some degree, but like have a variety of interests. Whereas like my friends on BookTube are like pretty singularly focused on horror books and horror film.
That's interesting.
So we've been kind of talking about this too, is like, because we consume so much horror year round that we like get ourselves so amped up for October, and then it all of it just like, our joy just immediately like deflates, that we have suddenly no energy to consume horror stuff. But that's more so horror reading for me. I am doing like the thing that a lot of people do where they watch like 31 new to them horror films.
Are you actually going to get through 31?
I'm at 26 currently.
What? Incredible. We're on day
26. So I think I will end up doing that.
Whoa, that's so cool. I love when people do that, and I feel like so few people actually succeed in it. I think it's like, I don't know, there's something about like that numbered like goal that is really cool to me.
I didn't think that I was going to do it, because I also, another spooky thing I did was I went to Salem with my best friend. My best friend from high school and I went to New England last week, like the 13th through the 20th ish, in which we went to Salem and did a whole road trip through like from Boston to Portland, Maine, to, you know, through New Hampshire and Vermont and back down to Boston. Of course, during this time, I got to hang out with both friend and producer of the show, Julian, which
he does
exist. Yep, which was honestly incredible. Julian, I think we already knew that Julian was an angel, but truly, thank you, Julian.
Oh, I yeah. Actually, I will say for the Patreon listeners, Liv pointed out that Julian and I didn't have each other's numbers, despite working with each other for several years at this point. So we just talk over DM. So we shamefacedly exchanged numbers and enhanced our friendship. And then I literally just DM'd him right now to tell him that these episodes are on track. I just forgot. I don't know about this guy. What's his number? Who is this person?
Not saying that you always have to text him, but it was truly deranged that I was like, me and my best friend were like out in Boston, and I was like, you know what? I'd really like, you know, like Julian had moved away, but like I wanted to, you know what his recommendations were going to be for like, you know, good bars in Boston to go to. And so I texted Trevor and I'm like, hey, can you give Julian, or can you text give me Julian's number, because I want to text him for this thing. And he was like, oh, I don't have that. And it's like, okay, he's been producing your show for what, like 5 years?
Yeah, something like that. We've never exchanged numbers. Yeah, as someone pointed out, sorry about that ding, ladies and gentlemen. As someone pointed out, it's a very male-based friendship that we have, I think. It's very male coded to never give
Who do you think pointed that out?
I don't understand what we were doing. It really was just a lack of attention. Did you see any films in Salem? Did you see any scary movies up there?
No, and it was honestly like we had thought about it, because we were in Salem on like a Thursday or something, and they were like showing Psycho that night at the Salem movie theater, and I was like, oh, you know, like maybe we could stay and do that. But just like, I don't really love driving in Boston. It kind of sucks.
It does, and
I didn't really want to drive at night, so we honestly didn't stay in Salem until like nighttime. We kind of like did it until the mid-afternoon.
And I understand that is the spookiest possible time to stay in Salem.
Is the nighttime?
Yes.
It was okay. It was a fine town. There's definitely lots of like witch shops and historical stuff going on. But it felt kind of like New Orleans in a way.
Person who has just seen New Orleans. I'm getting a lot of New Orleans vibes from, sorry.
Okay.
I'm not serious. I'm just teasing.
But you know, I've spent much time in New Orleans and seen, you know, mostly not as a tourist, but sometimes doing touristy things as you're allowed to do, even whenever you know, like I think even people who live in New Orleans know when they're doing kind of like touristy stuff.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it kind of felt like that, where it was mostly moving around a city that was of tourists rather than like mostly people who like live and work there.
That makes sense.
It was like interesting because apparently Salem is a locale that people go to during the month of October. So there was lots of tourists there. And
now, why is that? That seems kind of strange. Not a big history in Salem for spooky things happening, right?
I mean, it is interesting that it's become like a Halloween locale, even though like the understanding is that no witchcraft was ever done there. You know, it's like right. The people who were hung for being witches, no one actually believes that they were witches in retrospect. It wasn't like, oh, you know, like it's really spooky that they found those witches out and hung them.
Yeah, we go to Salem to honor the witches who were not witches and say, like, I bet you would have enjoyed this spooky time. Goody Daniels. I'm sorry. Sorry that things didn't go the other way.
Rip, you would have loved this one, Giles Corey.
My man is being referenced on No Cartridge once again. That's one more stone off of his chest.
I hope you're getting more weight in heaven.
And not just money, but other weight as well. Okay, so let me ask you the big question. Here's the first big question. Is Psycho a new horror movie to you?
Is Psycho the 60s horror film? I still haven't seen it. I've never seen it before.
No, I misheard you. You still haven't seen it?
No, I haven't seen it.
It's so good.
I know. I have plans to watch it as... There's no reason to expose myself for this.
I asked. But, I guess that's my fault. Sorry.
But I want to, I don't know if I've mentioned this to you before, like kind of start looking at depictions of birds in horror, which I feel like Psycho is a good one to do for that. From my understanding.
Psycho's pretty good. That director didn't make many other movies about birds, though, so you're pretty safe just doing that one. But yeah, no, that's interesting. I never knew that you hadn't seen Psycho. I think you'll really like that one. Anthony Perkins is wonderful. I think he's
Psycho is like one of those things where it's like I feel like I have such a big cultural knowledge of it that it keeps getting put off. Like, when's the day that I'm supposed to watch Psycho? It's
no, I
like.
Hear you.
I mean, there's so many other things like that. Like, you know, I've never seen Titanic, but I feel like I've seen Titanic. There's never going to be a day where I'm like, well, I'm going to sit down and watch this 3-hour long movie because I already feel like I know. I mean, I know what happens at the end. You don't, you know.
I feel like Titanic. Yeah. So like the difference between those, like I absolutely understand what you're saying. And like the weight of expectation as far as that goes can be like, yeah, why would I even care? It's like I felt that way about Citizen Kane. Like I was never interested in watching Citizen Kane. And then I was TAing a class and they had to watch Citizen Kane too, so I had to watch it. And when I watched it, I was like, oh, this movie is nothing like what I thought it was gonna be. Like,
no, I think I would actually really like Psycho. It's just that I've never I've never seen the birds either. Just
you should watch
never...
that one first for your bird thing, I think.
I don't know. I don't know if it applies.
No, you're right. I come to think of it. But no, like I think the other, I mean, I think the thing about Psycho though is like, I will say Titanic is a movie that when you watch it, you're just like, it probably is exactly what you expect. Like that's a movie that is, it's not a bad movie, but it's like, it's very much what the cultural consensus was about it. Like it's a love story on the Titanic. And like, it's a James Cameron movie. So there's a lot of like big scenes. Psycho surprised me when I saw it, honestly. Like, how little of the movie is actually like the climactic scenes is very weird. And effective. So whenever you do watch it, I hope it hits for you.
Mm-hmm.
But second question was, what is the most, I don't want to put you on the spot with like 26 movies. So I'll say like,
oh, I'll list them all right now. I'm not scared.
Well, that wasn't what I was going to do. But That's uniquely cruel. I'll have to keep that in my pocket. All right, Liv, go. Prove it. No, I was going to say, I mean, if you want to list them all, feel free. But I was going to say, what is the one that sort of off the top of your head or multiple that is most interesting to you?
Oh, okay. So one that is new, a 2021 release. So a lot of the horror films that I watched through the Nightstream Festival, which is the online horror film festival that's like a combination of the Overlook Film Festival, which is out in New Orleans, and then the Brooklyn Film Festival, Brooklyn Horror Film Festival, Boston's Horror Film Festival, and one other one, I don't remember where from. But I watched like 10 movies during that film festival prior to me going to all my vacation. So I was watching like 3 movies a day.
Oh, that's the life, right?
And the one that I wanted to watch most from it ended up being like a 5-star film for me, even though it's like overall like very mixed reviews. And that is We're All Going to the World's Fair, directed by Jane Schoenbrunn. And it's like very, it's, you know, has some genre crossover, but it's like about this like teenage girl who's like lonely. Not that it like overly like is like very melodramatic in how lonely she is, but it's like very real life lonely. And that like, there's like these very, nostalgic shots of urban sprawl for me. So like just like lots of like strip malls and stuff that feels much like my hometown.
Oh, interesting.
But is otherwise like pretty rural, that she's like living in a place that she clearly is not really meant for. And she gets into this this like online game, which I thought it was going to be a video game, but it's like a kind of like an urban legend YouTube video challenge, like the horror version of the ice bucket challenge, where it's like, I forget what all you do. Is like she goes through the ritual of doing it, like the first scene in the film where you like, you have to like say, I want to go to the World's Fair like 5 times and watch this weird video that has like a lot of like strobe effects and stuff. And then like people upload videos of like how they're changing over time, and there's changes in their body and minds following them doing this like online viral challenge.
Oh, weird.
But it's like mostly about, I don't really want to like give too much more of like the meat of it in a way, but it's really more about kind of like loneliness in a very online time. And you know what that means for a teenage girl in environment that she's in, and like that she doesn't really have like family or friends.
Yeah.
So I felt like it was very, where it could have gone, like very melodramatic and overwrought. Like it really just felt very genuine to me, and in a way that I really clicked with. So
that's really cool. I think that's something that a lot of people want to make, like a film that's sort of like, oh, you know, how do we describe loneliness in our time?
Mm-hmm.
When our time feels so unique with, like, I mean, with the internet particularly, but then also with, you know, COVID and stuff like that, and this idea of a lack of genuine, like, interpersonal connection or whatever, what we might call genuine. And, like, to actually pull that off is pretty remarkable, because I think a lot mm-hmm. of films try and then absolutely fail, right? like sort of just, like, fall back on old tropes or sort of, like, valorize in-person communication in a way that sort of makes the other stuff seem, like, silly or pointless. And it sounds like the way you're describing it, it sounds like this is a much more sort of careful and interesting approach.
Yeah, it gets to, like, talk to about, like, coping mechanisms for it, and also, like, people who understand how lonely a teenage girl can be, and, like, weaponizing that, and just, like, you know, like, the real threats of being online in a way that was, like, very, very careful. And
so you're telling me there are just threats to being online.
It definitely hasn't done anything bad for me per se, but
personally, that's mostly what I was concerned about. In all seriousness, that sounds like fantastic. I think the media I've seen, and I haven't seen enough of it to really say, but, like, it seems to me like when people talk about the internet, they're really unable to take seriously the content and, like, the conversations on the internet, and either just, like, think about it as, here is a warning about what could happen to you, or here is all this dumb stuff that's going to fade away, so don't get too into it and don't, like, make bad decisions. And, like, that isn't quite right. Like, it feels much more like what you're describing, where it's like, yeah, this is a very real and in some ways very dangerous place, but also, mm-hmm. like, very potential rich and interesting and wild and I don't know, vibrant.
It's interesting too. Like, most of the other films that I've watched this month are, like, very, like, fun Halloween-y stuff, like sleazy Italian exploitation kind of stuff, or, like, giallo.
Interesting. You've never shown an interest in sleazy Italian things
or giallo. And then, of course, obviously, I've watched the incredible End Play this month, but my other favorite of this month so far was also maybe my other favorite. But another one that really clicked with me that I don't hear anyone ever talking about is a movie called Toad Road, which I think is like it sounds like a Mario Kart level, I think, is why maybe some people would not pick it up.
I will not shame it for sounding like a Mario Kart level. I think that is admirable and cool.
But yeah, it's from 2012. So pretty, I guess not pretty, that's almost a decade old at this point. But it's about, like, this urban legend about Toad Road, which is in, like, rural Pennsylvania, about, like, there's, like, these gates out in a forest, and if you go through all seven gates, you go straight to hell, which, like, feels like a great urban legend. But, like, what the movie's, like, actually about is, like, this, like, group of friends in, like, a nowhere rural town that, like, they all talk about, like, wanting to get out, but they've, like, they just do drugs all the time, and, like, that's, like, how their friend group is, like, formed, is around drugs and drinking too much, and, like, it's just, like, I know those people. It's, like, it feels so familiar. So kind of, like, about that feeling too, that that kind of, like, emptiness and, like, the empty friendships and that, like, pull between, like, the longing to get out and, like, the feeling like you would never be able to do that. So it's, like, another very, like, really depressing horror movie that you, like, get left with, like, a hangover after watching. It's just like, oh, Toad Road did me in.
I gotta go to sleep now. I just watched Toad Road. I just got a low score on Toad Road. I have to go to bed. No, I mean, that sounds great. Like, it actually reminds me. So a lot of what I've been doing in terms of horror has been audio horror. I've been listening a lot to a podcast that has a very, like, mid name, but it's been quite interesting, called the No Sleep Podcast, which I really like. And they do interesting stuff sometimes where they try, like, more They try to do like fiction that wouldn't necessarily work on the main show, and they call it Sleepless Decompositions. And they're hit or miss for me. Like, you know, because it's amateurs writing fiction in a lot of senses, and it's like, it's always voice acted beautifully, but like, so the fiction can vary in quality. And there was this one that was about this woman who had to, you know, go home to her hometown because her father was dying. And I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, I've heard enough, like, you know, coming of age stories or like having to go back home stories or something. Maybe I won't be super interested in this. So I like paused it for a while and then came back to it. And it was like, it reminded me of how you described Toad Road, in that like there is this like inability to get away from one's hometown. But then also something like supernatural baked into it in such a way mm-hmm. that like, yeah, in the story, which is by S.H. Cooper, I think it's called Sunrise. It's about a town called Sunrise. And like the thing keeping them in town is this supernatural thing. Like, no one can leave because they're bound by this thing that's like enervating them. But what's cool about it is like, yes, that's kind of the plot and stuff, but it's never like, you're never like told, you know, yeah, so everyone who ever did anything bad is like completely exonerated because they were fighting this horrible thing. It's like, it is sort of like it's metaphorical just as much as it is literal. And I think like horror in some ways, I never really thought about explaining what it's like to grow up in a place you think is going to bring you back at any given point.
It's haunting.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm there with you. Like, I still think at some point I'm just going to end up waking up back in the town I grew up in and like, oh no. I would make decisions off of the like totally irrational fear that like my old hometown had like a vortex effect on me, and I was going to go end up working in like the local paper factory or something like that. And like, there is something supernatural about that, and haunting and terrifying. And I guess I never really thought about it in terms of genre, but it's absolutely there.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess because it is like such a horrific feeling that I can't think of anything that's non-horror that really like addresses like just how shitty it feels.
No, I guess that's right. Like, I've never really been able to explain it. Like, whenever I talk to people about it, they're like, you sound insane. Like,
yeah. Like, well, sound, I mean, that's the thing.
Like a crazy person, what you're saying.
That's the thing too, is like no one else really seems as, you know, that I grew up with seems as upset. One of my best friends, like he will never come back to our hometown, and except for like extreme circumstances. Right. And like, I think that he feels that, but just like, I would expect that most people would feel like that, and they don't. They're like, especially people down here in like Cajun land, is like, they can't imagine leaving. They don't want to leave. And it's like, I don't understand. I wish I had that, you know, that sense of like calm with where you're at, but yeah. I've never felt that in my life.
Yeah, I guess like part of, I think like moving away for a little bit for me from where I like grew up was helpful. But also like, I just like being 30 minutes from the town that I felt like I would be trapped in, like being in a different town and being able to say like, no, this is my space. Like, I'm in my space. Even that somehow is like, it's like a, I mean, it's wholly irrational, right? But like, it also is this like, it's almost like a warding thing. Like if I drove back into that area, I'd start feeling anxious. Like immediately. And like, the anxiety comes from a very real feeling that I'm not going to be able to be let free of it. And like, I guess I've never really talked to people about it, because every time I've had, like, they don't get it. Like, they're like, well, that's not really how places work. Like, yeah, no, that, you're describing something that isn't real. But that feeling is like, and in fact, like, people not believing you is absolutely a horror trope. I never put two and two together on that, but I think you're absolutely right.
It's the most disconcerting feeling. Like, if I ever have to go to my parents' house, because I stay in my child, like, they've had that house my entire life, and my bedroom is exactly the same as it was, like, whenever I moved out after high school, which was basically the same as it was, like, all through, like, middle school, too. Like, it's just, like, accumulated more stuff over time.
Sure.
But, like, waking up and feeling like, oh, to the last, like, you know, how long has it been, like, how long have I moved out? Like a 10 years, 11 years, has the past decade not really happened? Am I still just like 18? Like, it feels very, very upsetting.
Yeah, there's like, I mean, I was mad at them at the time, but I'm very grateful for my mom moving after the divorce and like setting up elsewhere. Cause like, it's easy to draw a line between like the, where I grew up, where I really am terrified of moving, and the other place that I grew up, which is like, well, it's fine. It's just kind of like nondescript. It's whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause if I ever, like, I think having that distance is super helpful. Cause it's like, if I, if the few times I've like stayed over at friends' houses in that area or like spent a long time there, I need to leave at some point. Like I get the urge to just like get in a car and go as far as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you're similar to me in that you can become nostalgic easily.
Oh yeah.
And so like for me, like that nostalgia, like it's very transportative that like, I can immediately fully feel what it was like whenever I was like 17 or 18 or whatever. And like, I just don't like being back there and like, you know, having to both have like the full feelings of, you know, 29-year-old Olivia and 17-year-old Olivia at the same time.
Yeah. That's a horrible feeling. Cause like, it is like, you immediately get the knowledge of what was and was not true about your 17-year-old self, but also like knowing what did and did not occur, what was or was not like an overreaction, or what would and would not end up being important. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't feel good. Like, it doesn't feel good to know those things.
Mm. Also something that cannot be conveyed to my family and understanding why I do not want to come home.
Yep. Again, sort of like, I mean, in we just talked about this, listener note, we're recording this after we recorded the most recent No Cartridge Drive-In. And I mean, we talked about this in terms of like, you know, not believing someone in like a horror story. Like, would they say like, oh, this is happening to me? Like the trope being like, oh, you're imagining it, right? I mean, even to that point where you're like, well, you just need to sort of like start recognizing this is just like a geographical place. It's not going to hurt you. And it's like, you want to explain like, no, that's not right. That's not the way it is. And it just is, it's unconveyable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially to my mom, who is just like mentally healthy.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Wait a minute. No, wait, I've been learning over these past few months, and I'm learning about this thing called subtext and irony. And I'll talk to you after the show about it, but I have some ideas. But yeah, no, that's super interesting. I guess, like, you know, one of the things I never really, I don't know, like I find very hard to understand about horror sometimes because I like it so much as a genre, right? Like I like scary things and I like the sort of genre elements of slashers and like gothic horror and stuff like that. Like I think sometimes I forget how poignant the actual social connections in horror can be when they're done mm-hmm. correctly because of like how evocative they are about like alienation and loneliness and just like a lot of negative emotions. And sometimes I shy away from that, I think, because like, I don't know, it makes it a little less fun and a little more poignant.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing too, is usually it's like very off-putting to me whenever a horror movie sets out to be like, well, I'm going to be about this thing. Like, yeah, I'm going to have like stuff that looks like other stuff, but I'm going to be about this thing. And like where it comes into like that elevated horror label, which is just such a joke.
You're just not there for the Blumhouse and A24s of our time.
But like, I don't know why, because like Toad Road is clearly, you know, not about, I mean, it is about this urban legend in a way, but you know, like it is about something different too. I don't know why that's not. I think the reason why that's not as upsetting to me is because it still feels like rough around the edges, whereas like something like, I don't know, like really like the new Candyman, like everything is put in its place to mean something. And it's like so clinical in its approach that it becomes like just very off-putting, on top of it just not being a very good movie. And like, if you're going to like set out to be about something, then you better get it right. Mm.
Yeah.
And so like having like these messy politics and like obviously the original Candyman had messy politics, but the whole film was messy and was like rough around the edges and had room for ambiguity and other interpretation rather than being like this like step-by-step approach of like, okay, this is what this film is about and we're going to tell you directly.
Right.
I think it actually had horror elements to it, whereas like this did not feel tense for a second. You know, like I don't get scared by horror movies, but it should still have tension.
Right. Yeah. I think like, you know, it reminds me in some ways of how like, you know, there's like some extraordinarily homophobic readings and understandings that are very much like part and parcel with the second Friday, Nightmare on Elm Street. But there's also something that's like very, I don't know, like evocative about watching that as like a movie about gay panic and or a movie about like you know, queer identification becoming like an object of fear, like mm-hmm. because it doesn't quite work in every way. It fumbles and kind of messes up, and like sometimes it's like clunky or sometimes it's tone deaf, but it's like entirely uncalculated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like all horror does have, you know, is we live in a society.
All horror. This is messing me up.
All horror does reflect, you know, like our social environment. So you don't have to set out to make it to be about the social environment. Right. It just is organically, and like that's what you're saying. And I mean, that's true of, you know, like of the first Candyman as well, is like, you know, it's revealing how people were feeling. Is it defensible? No, not fully. But there's something there to interpret rather than like being fed of like a, I just, movies being moralizing is not for me.
No, I agree. And I think even if you take something like It Follows, where there's like, yeah, the monster is STDs, like the monster mm-hmm. is sex or whatever. Like the fact that it still is appealing or interesting to people is because it's still like a scary movie and it's using like elements of other scary movies, which, and one of which is like sex is a mark of whether who will and will not die. Right. And like that's more interesting in a lot of ways than being like, okay, guess what I'm going to tell you about? It's society and it's history and it's I'm your host, Candyman. Right. Like mm-hmm. it's the Hamilton problem where it's like, oh, shoot, we're interesting characters from history here to tell you about what happened. And that's just not like super compelling as art.
Yeah. Well, I think too, It Follows does have, you know, like, sure, it could be about STDs, but there's just like people have so many anxieties about sex. Like it could be STDs, it could just be the act of sex, it could be like the emotional weight that it could carry for someone. You know, just the social implications. Like it's definitely about sex, but like what about it? And that there's other questions involved too, like, you know, like the consent. Consent between, like, people are consenting to have sex, but are they consenting to have this thing follow them around? And like, just, you know, there's other questions that are there to unpack. It's been a while since I've seen it, so like, I don't know that I did really like it whenever I first saw it. I don't know.
Yeah, me too. Like, yeah, now... I'm wondering the same question as you right now, which is like, what I feel. but I think so, and I think for that reason, which is basically like, yeah, look, it's a movie that asks like questions that aren't easily answered by its audience necessarily, whereas like something like Candyland, like I'm just owning this movie now. No, something like Candyman is like, yeah, okay, like this is a movie that has all of its answers laid out for you. It has a particular way it means to tell you the movie works.
Mm-hmm. I love that you were trying to drag it like as some Lord Licorice as shit.
Like, come on, dude, like no one cares. Like everyone hates Everyone hates your ice cream
the other ones.
Ice cream floats ass storytelling.
But yeah, so I guess that's why I only watch exploitation films from the 1970s now.
I think it's cool that you only watch like Chainsaw Massacre Girls.
Well, I was looking at, like, what are my top rated films other than We're All Going to the World's Fair? So actually above Toad Road, I did rate, hold on, what's this movie called? It's like Black Magic Rites, and it's like truly about, you know, like virgin sacrifices, and there's like a sex comedy like subplot, and it's sweet. Like true. One of my like Letterboxd friends described it as like the exploitation version of Suspiria. Like there is kind of a plot, but you're shocking. Not gonna get it, and it doesn't really matter.
Shocking to me that you would enjoy the exploitation version of Suspiria. It does not sound like a movie I would suggest to my friend Olivia.
So I just like, you know, show me some interesting stuff and I'll come up with my own. Like, I've got plenty of anxieties like bouncing around in there. I can like paint them on top of whatever interesting tableaus you have for me.
I also think like there's an element to like quote unquote, I guess like, I don't know how you describe it. It's not quite educational, but like message oriented horror, I guess we'd say, mm-hmm. like that also sort of tells you like, and this is the real stuff you should be watching. Like the stuff that tells you something, mm-hmm. where like horror that has messages incidentally is still saying like, oh yeah, I'm a horror movie. Like, you know, it's like, it's fun. It's good. We're enjoying ourselves here. Like you can just go watch another horror movie too. Like there's no sort of like, there's no agenda to make it like a heightened artistic medium. And which is, in fact, what makes it a heightened artistic medium.
Right. Ultimately. Yeah, I feel like trying to have, like, a moral message by committee in a feature film with, like, a huge budget behind it is always going to be two steps behind if it's correct at all.
yes, absolutely.
So, you know, I would rather watch something that's, like, very clearly problematic but hasn't decided that it's not problematic. And so, like, you know, it's whatever.
I also would like that. That sounds good.
Yeah, I also loved The Erotic Rites of Frankenstein this month. You know, like, just...
I mean, listen, sounds good to me. We love that... erotic rites and we love Frankenstein.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't think that there's anything to be gathered from this, but just like show me something interesting. I do like some modern horror every now and then.
Yeah. Just don't make it didactic. Let live live.
Mm-hmm. Muppet's Haunted Mansion. Have you seen it yet?
I haven't. Is it good?
It's fine. It's I love the Muppets and well, I like so the Haunted Mansion. So I think if you love Muppets, then it's definitely watchable. It's not for all you Muppet naysayers out there. I hope they're not listening and I hope you don't exist.
Who naysays the Muppets? I don't want to hear from them.
It is weird, too. It's like there probably always was like celebrities in Muppets
movies.
There were,
movies. Yeah, they were just always like...
But they weren't the people that I was turned off by.
Bob Conway or something like that.
Like, who even was in this one? It was like people I really did not care about.
Oh, Zsa Zsa Gabor is here on the Muppets. Wow. Yeah. Like,
oh,
it's not, yeah.
Like Will Arnett. Like, I don't want to see Will Arnett in the Muppets movie.
Yeah.
Danny Trejo. You know, Danny Trejo, I think, actually kind of fits in with like a Muppets film. Yeah,
he's kind of silly in the same way, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, there's elements of silliness to Danny Trejo, but not to Will Arnett. I mean, Will Arnett's very silly, but not a Muppet silly.
Right. It doesn't have like the same like absurd factor to it.
No, he's just like a person.
I think that the most problematic factor of this movie is that it's a Gonzo-centric film. Ooh. But his friend in this is Pepe the prawn and not Rizzo the rat. Rizzo, I mean,
oh,
it's
Pepe
Gonzo
the
and
prawn
Rizzo.
Is his enemy, not his friend.
Well, I mean, you're telling me, but where was Rizzo?
Yeah. Oh, that's awful. No, I don't like that. Was Rizzo not even in it?
There was I think a unnamed rat and rat lady in the film, but I don't think that they like name him as Rizzo.
Do you think like he's not hanging out with Rizzo as much because Rizzo has a steady girlfriend?
Oh, I really hope that's not true.
That'd be rough. I think they'll work it out. That can be tough between friends, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is cool. Like, I've never been to Disney World, but, like, it's clearly set to be for a fan of the Haunted Mansion ride. I've also not seen the Haunted Mansion movie with Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people have. I get the feeling that was not a huge hit.
But, you know, like I've never been on the ride, but it looked like it would be a lot of cool references if you had.
All right. So for us Muppets heads and all you Disney heads out there, all you park goers.
Yeah. All you WDWers.
What?
Walt Disney Worlders.
Oh, OK. Sorry. I don't know the jargon. That's kind of up to you and yours.
That's just something that I learned, you know.
Doing some research.
I don't think anyone uses that, but they might after this.
Oh, I think so. This is a pretty big reach.
41 minutes into the No Cartridge Halloween episode after we talk about our traumas.
People love listening about our traumas. People are coming here for traumas. I wonder what Liv and Trev think about late at night when it's dark and no one's around. Well, good news.
Here's your Patreon episode. We're still depressed.
Well, Liv, time to reveal another trauma. I don't know why we monetized this. This seems like a bad idea, but here we go.
All right, 10 top traumas, go.
Oh, good one. What's number one? Fear of failure. No. I feel super edified in so many ways. I'm so glad you watched all these films.
Yeah, me too. I'm so glad.
Liv, it's about that time where we both get loopy because it's late. So let me leave you with this, and I'll even give you something of my own before to break the ice.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You don't have to answer every question on the episode. I'm going to ask what Halloween activity, I guess based on media, but if you have some sort of like, you know, non-media idea, that's fine too. I'd be happy to hear that. But media is probably the most easy one that you would recommend to people. And I would recommend, I have two. I have a normie one, which is like if you haven't done it. And like most of the people who are listening to the show have already done this. But I remember there was a Halloween that I did this for the first time. And it was very, I don't want to oversell it. It was nice. It was a really nice little treat. I would say if you haven't yet, go read The Enigma at Amigara Fault, AMIGARA Fault by Junji Ito. It is free online if you Google it. It's a really nice piece, and it's spooky and just the right size for a nice Halloween.
I love whenever, you know, a story like that just like fits into one of our episodes.
Oh yeah, it's perfect. I mean, it's weird that we didn't talk about it previously in the last few hours, but it's kind of messed up. But speaking about fit,
here's ours.
Here's my Halloween fit guide. The other thing I'd suggest,
the whole thing.
Boom. The other thing I'd suggest if you're thinking about a video game to play for this Halloween, I would suggest go and play some of the creepy RPG Maker games that have been very formative for a lot of your favorite video game makers, and maybe don't look like they might be as spooky or scary as you think they are. I promise you, they're very interesting and often quite scary. My recommendation that I know because I've played it is Mad Father, which looks it looks goofier than it is. It's a creepy story and like has a lot of the elements of horror that we've been talking about here and in our previous episode. And it's a nice little RPG Maker game. It's fun. I really enjoyed it. I think it's great. But yeah, any of those, like there's dozens. I won't go into it, but yeah.
Yeah. If you haven't played World of Horror still after our review of World of Horror, since we're talking so much about Junji Ito on this and our drive-in episode, definitely play World of Horror. I think that's a good horror game for people like me who love horror but don't like horror games because they're scared of jump scares because it doesn't really have like that kind of effect, even though it is very... like it has like the fun parts of horror without the, you know. Yeah, without the
jump scares. I agree. No, 100%. And like it's super, it's evocative and interesting. Yeah, no, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
As well as also another scaredy cat game that I think is good. I don't remember if we ever talked about this. Sagebrush. Did we ever talk about this game?
No, never talked about Sagebrush.
Sagebrush is a game. I just talked about it on my YouTube channel. It's like why I was thinking about it. But it's about revisiting a journalist like visiting a cult compound following like a mass suicide. Like maybe like 10 years down the line or something like that. And so you go to like this cult compound and it's like the whole game's like a walking simulator with just like occasional puzzles. But like a very like low res game. But you kind of just like go sequentially through the story, like through the offices and through the living compounds and the school there. And like, there's like a cult leader and, you know, like maybe some weird sex stuff going on, but it's like mostly about like the actual like human, like the humanity of the people that were in the cult. And like, it is like tense, and spooky because it's like this abandoned cult compound. So like I consider it like a horror game, but also not a game where there's ever going to be a jump scare. I was like tense the whole time, and I wish someone was like had told me that there's no jump scares in it, so I could have just like relaxed a little bit. Because it was like one of those games where occasionally I was like, let me close my eyes 80% of the way.
the creators of the game are like, she didn't get the memo.
but I mean, like it is spooky and there is spooky imagery in it. Like there is horror imagery, but, nothing jumps at you. it's definitely very abandoned.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds great. I'm going to play that.
Yeah. It's on anywhere where you play it on games. I got it on like a Switch sale, but it's on itch and stuff too.
On Switch sounds fun.
Yeah. Wonderful. What was your question for me?
Should do this Halloween. You can make it Sagebrush if you want.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can play Sagebrush. I don't know. Be nice to people. give them treats and not tricks.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. Even if they don't have any treats, don't trick them. There's no reason to do that. People have enough going on. They don't need tricks.
I don't know. Just have fun. Be safe. Take care of yourself.
Just be good to each other, everyone.
Yeah. Isn't that how I always end all these things?
I think so. Yeah. Be good to each other, people. This is Olivia signing off.
I hope that's a fun Halloween guide is to be take care of each other. Is that what y'all wanted from me?
our 75-year-old hippie friend, Olivia Broussard, a.k.a. Earth Mother, has given us our Halloween guide for the weekend. Well, you gave us so many tips beforehand. No one could ever follow you.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, Liv, I'll see you on the other side. Have a very happy Halloween.
Oh, you too, Trev.
All right. We'll see you next After Dark.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.